Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, on our front nine at the Players, a very rare set of back-to-back feats accomplished by Scottie Scheffler, recapping our St. Paddy's Day weekends, March Madness, South by Southwest, new music from a pop music icon, and a whole lot more in sports news. And this week's guest on the show, Spencer Tatum. That's right, Spencer Tatum of Tatum Human Performance. You might not know the name, but he works closely with a guy named John Rahm. That's right, one of John Rahm's training members and lead staff for his strength and conditioning, joins us from the PGA Show and talks about his workouts and a whole lot more. Plus, we're talking brackets, free agency, and when we always end with food, a fried dessert debate, and a Top Chef experience for my co-host. All of it brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf. We love Desert Fox Golf, based out in Arizona, which is basically one of the golf capitals of the U.S., but their golf products, which help make the golf cart and golf round experience all the more better, are available anywhere at desertfoxgolf.com. They'd make a great gift, maybe even an Easter gift, for someone young in your life that's taking up the game, that loves riding around in a cart and likes to keep their phone safe and handy. That would be the Desert Fox Phone Caddy. They do that and a whole lot more for your golf game. Again, check out our friends at desertfoxgolf.com.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf. I'm Michael. He's Alex. And Alex, it was a day for the gods to put down their mark at TPC Sawgrass. Brian Harman's ball out of the pine straw didn't bounce forward. Xander Schauffele's ball out of the pine straw did bounce forward.
Correct.
Wyndham Clark's putt missed, and Scottie Scheffler went on the first player ever to defend at the Players' Championship in the 50-year history. He goes back-to-back, winning last week, and year-to-year, doing back-to-back weeks. This is, I am going to say it right now, Alex. Scottie Scheffler is this crop of golfers out there in the world right now. He is the Tiger Woods of this crop, and his ability to win and stay as a top ranked golfer when he couldn't putt until last week, all of last year, this guy could be the one to do the Tiger things everyone says someone is going to do.
Yeah, and you were throwing out that hypothetical in recent weeks, you know, as we joked about him not being able to find his putter. We kept saying the guy is hitting the ball tee to green just like Tiger Woods did, and the statistics actually back it up. You can compare his current season ball striking numbers to peak Tiger, and it checks out. So we were wondering, when would the putter come around? We got the glimpse of it and discussed it on last week's podcast with the Bay Hill win, and it came to full fruition with an unbelievable Sunday charge, like the greats do, like the number one golfer in the world should do when he's within five shots of a lead at a big tournament heading into Sunday. He delivers the fascinating round that gets him all the way into the clubhouse lead. And like you mentioned, all the competitors fall just a shot short left and right, down to the Wyndham Clark toilet bowl. Scottie Scheffler is doing those Tiger-like things where he doesn't maybe have his best or isn't scoring his best at any point, but he's finding a way to get himself to the top of the leaderboard when it matters. And that's why that comparison isn't too crazy right now.
Yeah, and doing it also this week with a bad neck. And that was,
he was getting worked on a lot.
He had that tape on the back of his neck as well over the weekend. He just put himself in position. He made birdies when he needed to make birdies. Of course, he missed that big one on, what was that, 13? And could have maybe put it away even earlier. But also, you know, rising up and these other guys just not being able to get there. Xander had this really in the bag and couldn't get it done. This was the opportunity maybe for Xander to have a good breakout and to set himself up for a major victory. and he couldn't do it. And of course, the last two major champions, Brian Harman and Wyndham Clark, were charging there at the end and just couldn't do it. One of the worst lip outs, I think we could say in the last decade for Wyndham Clark there.
Absolutely brutal lip out there. I fully thought that was down. And so did he. He actually did the pump
double,
fake
double fist bump.
And then went, said, no, yeah, I can go for... No, I can't go for it. Okay, two tries at that fist pump for Wyndham Clark, and it didn't stay down. But what you said was really echoing that idea that we haven't really thrown out in a long time of that leaderboard gravity we used to see when Tiger Woods got at or near the leaderboard towards the end of events. You saw a bit of it on Sunday, where when Scheffler's name ascended towards the top, things started to get a little hairier and a little shakier for his competitors because they know how dangerous he is late in moments like that at big events. So you threw out the comparison right at the top.
Yeah,
we are seeing these Tiger-like things now happen for Scottie Scheffler. He is by no means at or near Tiger Woods' level of accomplishments, but anecdotally, what this season looks like reminds us a lot of vintage Tiger Woods seasons as we head into major championships now.
I mean, I almost want to ask the question, if we take Scottie Scheffler right now and put him up against prime Tiger Woods, who's going to win?
I mean, AI should answer that in the next few years, right? We'll be able to just parse out all these iterations of matchups of legendary golfers, past and present, and put them head to head. So surely we'll get that question answered for real. But yeah, it's looking very similar. You can check the numbers. The ball striking statistics were there, and we were just wondering if the putter was ever going to come alive. He's got the putter, and it's amazing timing too. It's like, hey, Scottie Scheffler, like, you know, you can struggle through the summer, fall, and winter, but you get your game in shape in March, right as we head into major championship season. Yes, sir. I'll take that 100 times out of 100 for my month to get hot. So yeah, it's all Scottie Scheffler now heading into the first major of the year in a few weeks.
Can we also just touch on the three past podcast guests that were in the top 20?
Oh, thank you for pointing that out, because I kept looking at the leaderboard all week and I was like, there's some representation from our guys. It started early with Taylor Montgomery, who had a very nice start to his week, and then finished well, like you mentioned, all inside the top 20. And then Dylan Wu, just another consistent finish, just paving his way to paychecks week in and week out. But the one we need to touch on, Mike, is Nate Lashley.
Yeah.
You can go ahead and pull up his 2024 results. He is Mr. Feast or Famine. Nate Lashley has played in, I believe, 7 or 8 events, Mike. He has 6 missed cuts and 2 top 10s. So Nate Lashley is either all the way in or all the way out on a golf course. And Sunday at Scott Sawgrass, he was all the way in to propel him to one of his best finishes of the year.
Yes, indeed. So those guys do well. I do also, just real quick, I'm going to ask you for one answer. Give me 30 seconds on Rory McIlroy. What?
Well, the opening 65 was there too.
Yeah.
And it gives you that first look like, oh, Rory opens in 65. He's going to be part of the narrative all week long. And he's just not able to put 4 together these days. He has not been able to put 4 together like we remember from past years. It's tough to see. And it's now a growing epidemic with his game.
I'm now going to ask a follow-up, even though I said I wasn't going to on one question there. You know, we've seen that he hasn't been able to do it in recent years in general, but how damaged do you think he is from the whole LIV PGA Tour debacle? Oh,
playing politician for a couple of years?
And then being the martyr. I mean, how much do you think that is really? He's out there. He's maybe putting on a good face. He's trying. But I really wonder mentally how much that's affecting him in the gray when he's out there.
It could be just leftover exhaustion from everything and trying to restructure the way his days and weeks went when he really was preparing successfully and winning golf tournaments in bunches. It's something to ponder. But I know as we're heading now into Master season, you know, that's the last one that he hasn't conquered yet. So he's got all eyes on that. We'll see if he can maybe put 4 together there when it really matters.
Speaking of LIV Golf and the PIF, there was big sightings of Tiger Woods and Yasser from PIF playing together in the Bahamas.
Wow.
Is this the telltale sign? I mean, we heard that the player advisory board that Tiger sits on was told to meet with Yasser and PIF, because it sounds like a deal is maybe in the works or getting there, and they need to get the player board on board with it. So do we think that's what this is, or is this actually Yasser just going for the source here?
Yeah, I know. That's the first thought is, oh, great. You know, the board and Yasser have come to some sort of communication. They said, we're not going to give you the board. We're just going to hand you Tiger Woods. He'll do our talking for us. That's our guy. You got any questions? I hope it's that. But the evil side of me thinks and knows that Yasser will present some sort of offer to Tiger Woods to up and leave the PGA Tour. Don't get that twisted. That will get mentioned during this 18 holes. And we don't know how long it's going to be until we get the full dispelling of what actually goes on conversationally in that round. Maybe Tiger Woods' next press conference at Augusta could be the first time we really hear anything significant about it, depending on what the headlines look like for the rest of the week. But don't get it twisted. There will be an offer from Yasser to Tiger Woods to join LIV Golf with this round, and we'll definitely hear about it in due time.
You know, I don't think Tiger needs any money at this point. I think I have a feeling that if Yasser would be like, give me a number, Tiger would say there is no number. I just don't think, I feel like Tiger has had enough issues with reputation and the way he's viewed in the press over his career and his comeback story, that if he's concerned about his legacy, it's not in dollars anymore. It's in how he's perceived in history. Yeah. So he needs to maintain that. And he is the new grand. He's the father of the PGA Tour now, I guess you could say. Sure. The uncle, whatever we want to say. So he just can't go back on it now at this point, I feel like.
Yeah, it's a very interesting spot. This is obviously like kind of like a Geneva Convention breaking sliding doors moment for the game. Who knows what we learned from this round, but we'll definitely mark the day as when this happened, because this could be maybe the beginning of something more promising between the tours finally coming back together. So we all hope it maybe leans in that direction as well.
This weekend, in addition to the players, it was St. Patrick's Day weekend. And, you know, here in Savannah, Alex, it was the 200th parade for St. Patrick's Day. Hands down, the biggest weekend of the year in Savannah.
Yeah, you talk about this with legendary status in terms of the debauchery that goes on downtown there.
I avoid downtown Savannah with a 10-foot pole and then some. It's just, you don't go downtown in Savannah on St. Patrick's Day weekend. You don't do it. It is a mess. The parade also goes on for like 6 hours. So, because it's one of those good old fashioned Southern parades where everybody and their uncle gets to have a float. So,
sure, of course. Yeah.
You know, it's Southern one of those things. But St. Patrick's Day does at least, I think for us, make us think about Ireland and playing golf there last year.
Yeah, be sure to follow us on Instagram if you're not already, at COL Podcast for the podcast. He's at MWRINC, and I'm at Course of Life Alex. I posted a bunch of stories from our trip there. Fun looking back on the pints, the meals, the rounds. What was really, really shining through were the golf experiences as well too, Mike. I mean, it ended up getting me down the rabbit hole where I rewatched our European club recap video on our YouTube page. I can't stress how off the rails wild that entire day of golf was. And I'm glad we were able to capture some of it. So be sure to check out the YouTube page if you haven't seen those videos from our Ireland trip. And last week's podcast obviously featured our friend Allison Metcalf from Tourism Ireland. If you want to learn more about taking a golf trip to Ireland, definitely in my bingo card again, something I'm looking to check off one more time after that trip last summer.
And this week on our YouTube channel, we've got a video of you getting a front row view of a PBR event in Austin, Texas. Those bucking Broncos were right up in your face, Alex.
That was awesome. As soon as me and my wife saw where our seats were, I was like, oh, okay, our friends at PBR, you hooked it up correctly. And I knew I was going to have an awesome content piece coming our way. So yeah, again, check out YouTube, Course of Life Podcast. You can search us on there for the video. Front row at a bull riding event. I got sprayed a few times by bulls kicking up dirt, and there was an amazing bull of the night in this video that you need to see. The fierceness from this bull, I can't put it into words. So be sure to check out that video as well.
This week, the PGA Tour stays in Florida to head down to Innisbrook for the Valspar Championship. Xander, I believe, is still considered to be in the field out there.
Yeah, betting favorite as well, too. We've got Spieth and Justin Thomas also in the field as well, too. Those guys have competed and played well at this event in past years. I think they were both in the top 10 in 2023. This is the course that I've actually played, Mike. I played in high school. My grandfather lived in the Tampa St. Pete area. when I was in high school, it was just as brutal as I remember seeing it on TV now. The snake pit, they call their finishing set of holes. It's definitely a tough way to round out a great scorecard. A lot of drama. Last year's winner was only 10 under par, so I'm expecting a hard-fought championship here in Tampa this week.
Let's do a little tuned in as well. Justin Timberlake. What do we think of his music, Alex?
Yeah, have you heard anecdotally any of this new JT at all?
No, I haven't. I listen to a lot of Pandora right now, and I don't listen to new stuff. So,
yep. So this is one of the better new albums I've heard in recent months for sure. And the main reason, Mike, is because, you know, I'm one for the nostalgia. This Justin Timberlake album, it could have dropped in like 2007, and I would believe you. Like it's got that exact vibe from his original great solo pop music, the future sex love sound vibe a little bit from his classic album, a little bit of a newer sound with some of the slower R&B takes. No Angels is definitely my favorite on the album. I'm going high regards though. I listened to every single song through on YouTube, took a little time to do it while I was enjoying myself on Saturday evening. And I'm going to give it a solid, I'm going to go 8.4 out of 10 on the Justin Timberlake album. Definitely one of the better pop albums I've heard in recent months.
Does he bring sexy back?
On a couple of songs, yeah. Okay. But you can tell it's a growner, more mature set of lyrics and vocals on JT. And yes, there is a song featuring NSYNC. You may have seen some viral performances this past week where he brought the guys out at his LA concert, and there's a full NSYNC feature on the song Paradise. So if you're just looking for a little bit of the boy band reminiscing, be sure to check that one out too on his new album.
And while I was avoiding my city here at the 10-foot pole, I know you were embracing Austin, Texas this weekend.
Yeah, just for 4 hours, though. Don't get that twisted.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Train down, thanks to the Cat Metro, right down the street from my house to right downtown. Walked to an awesome radio station show. Saw a few different acts that you would definitely recognize by name. Philip Phillips, winner of American Idol back in the day. He had a classic song called Home, which a lot of people know very well. It's in about a million commercials that you've seen on TV over the years. And also got to see a new artist named Knox, who I met actually as well too. We're trying to get Knox on the show. It was really cool to see him perform. And Sam Nelson of X Ambassadors, one of my favorite kind of modern rock bands. Sam is going out on his own, but he did an awesome little acoustic set. So yes, I embraced 4 hours of downtown Austin during South By, and it was St. Patrick's Day weekend too. Surprisingly, not crazy busy though. So it was a successful mission. Got in, got out, not too much crowd.
Nice. Very nice. I know there's a lot of other stuff going on there too, but what's it sound like? Are the go-to movies coming out of South By?
Ooh, interesting. I'm forgetting the title of it, but I think Gosling was here for one that he was debuting, and he was on the yellow carpet for.
Was it the one where he was at the Oscars with her. He did the Oscar thing with her.
Correct. He said basically that, you know, this was just continuing. This was the after party for his role as Ken in the Barbie movie. So it was great to see him on the yellow carpet for South by Southwest. Yeah, pretty good celebrity poll. There was a panel with Brooke Shields and Meghan Markle, which got all the ladies of Austin very excited to be there. So good happenings at South by Southwest. Another festival successfully in the books.
All right, let's get to the turn and this week's guest. John Rahm, not this week's guest, but he's one of the best players in the world with one of the most powerful and unique golf swings. And it's unique because of that clubbed foot condition he was born with. And his trainer, Spencer Tatum, walks us through all the things that he had to work with John on and why John's swing is that way.
Yeah, it's a fascinating look behind the scenes because we, you know, see how these guys get to play and swing the golf club the way they do. But Spencer taking it from a physical fitness standpoint and working with John's unique set of limbs, quite literally, and the condition that he was born with, definitely changes the way he moves. But it's a fascinating look behind the scenes of one of the world's best players and how he trains for events. Next up here at the PGA Show, we're joined by an exercise physiologist. He does a little bit of everything with some elite NFL athletes and one of the best golfers on the planet as well, too. Founder and performance director at Tatum Human Performance, Spencer Tatum, hopping on the Course of Life. Spencer, how you doing?
I'm good, Alex. How are you?
Very good.
Glad to be here, man.
Yeah, definitely. So it's PGA Show week. I'm rocking the Masters polo, showing off the K-Club. Shout out to our friends in Ireland. So we love getting out to everything great in the world of golf. What do you enjoy most about being here at the PGA Show specifically?
Well, it's my first time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's crazy. I mean, I've been to a lot of trade shows, but this one might be the biggest.
You came for the right year, man. I've been here the last 2 years, but this year is ramped up. I can already tell you it's at least 30 to 40% bigger. So
they must have heard we were doing the podcast. That's why.
And it's your arrival. Yeah, they wanted to hear from John Rahm's team. He's the high in demand guys. People want to know things. But let's start first about with your career and kind of how you got to be the professional that you are today. Give everyone a little bit of background on yourself and your athletic career and how it got you to where you are now.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I started off left Louisiana. I'm born and raised there. So hard, cage country at heart, you know, so pretty good athlete, track and field, football, highly recruited. And then, you know, I started having injuries, right? A non-contact ACL, labrum tear in my hip in college. They couldn't really explain why, besides going, you have a muscle balance not right, or there's something, you're just off, you're not strong. And I'm like, well, how much stronger can I get? I was already squatting to 500 pounds you know, jumping 34, running 4.4. I'm like, so I had, there was another search of movement. So I went searching for this, and over the course of years, I started how we optimize human performance, unlock human potential. And that's kind of been driving what we do today. And it's been a fun journey because then I've been able to apply, and I want to experience something they experience too, right? So I mean, I'd be as good as John hitting the golf ball, but I want to know what it hits like to play 36, right? What does it play 18? You know, what does it feel like to hit balls? So it's not just like, hey, tell you what to do. I'm going to live it too.
So tell me a little bit about the THB. Where's the home base, the setup? What does it look like? And what's the day-to-day like there?
Yeah, so Tatum Human Performance is based out of Scottsdale, Arizona.
Nice. Love it there.
Yeah, doesn't suck.
I'm in Austin, Texas myself, but I've taken a few trips out there for Scottsdale for content, for Super Bowl weekend, waste management, all the good stuff.
Well, we're right up the street from waste management. So we're like a mile and a half waste management downstream Silverleaf. You know, our whole thing is same thing as, you know, what I was saying earlier, is that we're trying to optimize human performance. And when we're looking at that, we look at the human being first. What does it mean? Is the human being well? Is the human being healthy? And then what does their state look like? You know, we're looking at our clients, not just an athlete level. We try to bring a performance model that we bring to John, that we bring to the NFL, that we've done at Arizona State, we won a national title at, is that we try to bring it back down to guys like you, guys like me, like who still want to be an athlete, right? We're still a high performer. We're just doing something that doesn't go out to millions of viewers and get paid millions of dollars. So
amen.
We try to bring that model down there. We're looking at all these different aspects.
Very cool. So let's talk about some of those elite athletes that you have worked with and how those branch out to tips that everyday golfers listening can take into your life as well. I'm imagining that Scottsdale is a little bit of a hub for NFL players. Or tell me your background on working with players in the NFL specifically. I'm curious.
Yeah. So, I mean, I played college football, so I had a pretty good background knowledge there. But I started in Orange County, California. We got to work with Todd Norman. He kind of ran South Orange County. And from there, I started working with NFL guys, working with a guy named John Durnball. He's an NFL snapper.
Yep, that's right, yeah.
Magic man himself. He's crazy what he can do. Started working with some of the USC guys that were coming down from SC, coming to train, because my buddy worked for Mark Sanchez. And so we started with Sanchez's guys and the NFL Combine. And then my long-term client, Kevin Minter, second-round pick at LSU for the Cards. And Dominic Seuss came in. So, you know, if it's been... It's been a fun ride, and the golf thing, you just kind of, we brought an athletic model to golf. I mean, when we first started, because no one was really training golfers like athletes. They were trying to, I don't know if you remember, like the cable attachments and like trying to do golf swings. It's like, so we started training like athletes, and that's kind of what brought me to the forefront.
Absolutely, man. So let's talk about the golfer that you've been working with that's always in the news because his game is just absolutely on fire in recent years. In terms of connecting with John Rahm, I'm imagining that first came about with his Arizona State days maybe, but tell a little background on how you first linked up with him.
Yeah, so they had some challenges in the weight room. Golfers getting injured in the weight room. And Melissa Llewellyn, who's now at Auburn, reached out to me. I knew Melissa. Reached out to me, hey, can you come help my golf team? And then the assistant coach, a guy named Tim Mickelson, Phil's brother, actually showed up at the meeting too. And so we started with just going to help the women's team. Then we ended up helping the men's and women's team. This is like 2012, 13, somewhere around there. And there was a young Spaniard there named John Rahm. And John and I connected there.
He had Rodriguez on there too.
And he's Rodriguez. Too. He says Rodriguez. Oh, yeah. So, so connected and... You know, we started establishing a relationship there, and there we told we'd win a national championship in 3 years, and we did on the women's side. And, you know, when John turned pro, I was like, bro, what do you want to do? And he goes, well, whatever, of course we're going to continue working, right? And so that's, so we've been working ever since. Love so that. It's been a fun almost like 9-10 years now we've been together. So it's longer than my wife. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah, very fascinating. So for those people who don't quite understand John Rahm's background, explain the condition that he was born with his foot.
Yeah.
Now, you're the best person to ask about how that may affect or change his training or his swing or his regimen, but just explain that condition and how that determines how his golf swing moves, basically.
That's a great question, you know, because that's why we screen, right? That's why we do the TPI screen. That's why we do the movement screen, the functional movement screen, because we want to know, what do you have the ability to do? Can you squat? Can you hinge? Can you touch? Because if you can't hinge, you can't get a golf position. You can't set up, right? And then so the other side of it is if you can't align the joints and get the structure right, your rotations are going to be off. You're going to have the sway and slide. You have the hip, the early extension, right? So all these things come along. So with John, we noticed early on he had this club foot, right? So at birth, imagine your foot is completely in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
To break it, reverse the foot as a newborn, like brand new newborn infant, and wear a cast, right?
Wild, yeah.
So I was just talking to a gentleman, Michael, who's a golf professional in Naples, but he has a golfer 2 club feet. And so the interesting thing, the club foot, he has no ankle mobility. So he can't flex and bend his right ankle at all. Wow. And then if you see him and
I'm just thinking about that now.
So think about it, right? So you come back and your backswing, you
that's
load,
everything.
It's right. Just... And you come down, you want to create vertical force, right? To create lift in the driver. He can't push down. So instead of going, that's why his backswing's so short. So instead of going back and around, he goes out.
I didn't think about really it from his ankle perspective. I was always thinking foot, but wow, that's, yeah. Thank you for putting that in perspective.
And then in the shoe, so he wears a 13 size shoe on his left foot and 11 on the right side.
It's two size difference,
right?
Damn, wow.
And then the other thing that's fascinating too is his right leg, so which makes him perfect for golf, is he's 1.5 inches shorter on his right side. So when he sets up, he's already set up in that correct driver position, like from the jump. So it kind of works out really well. Now, when it comes down to his training, so you got to think, okay, like, what can he do? He can't move his ankle, so he can't squat. He can't really lunge that, right? So we always have him to, like, do workarounds. And if you watch some of the earlier videos, I can show you. But when he squatted, he couldn't even get to anywhere near 90 degrees. He had, like, a quarter squat, and now we got to where he can drop down into it and come back out of it.
Interesting.
So that's been huge. I mean, the one thing about John is he's so committed to his process, right? And that's what's made him so great is that, you know, when I've worked with 5 number ones in the world in different sports, right? I've worked with the UFC Black House back there, the Anderson Silva and those guys.
Oh, yeah.
And then John, and then I was Lindsay Davenport's trainer in tennis when she was number one in the world. And one thing you find with them is that there's one unique trait that really makes them different, right? There's something to do with the stuff, it's from everybody else, and the other pros are kind of all the same, but it's their mindset. And that's what really separates John, the way he perceives stress, the way he perceives his environment. Like, and you can look at like, okay, you get a 15 foot to win the Masters. You'd be like, oh my God, I can't believe we're going to do this. Like, oh my God, you're so nervous. You'd be like, oh my God, I can't believe my life dreams come true at 15 foot. So like, that's the way he perceives things, right? And that's so awesome. It's always a cool thing to work with those guys.
Yeah, it's cool to hear that perspective of how you work with him and especially work around the swing he has, because I know you're definitely a proponent of this. Like, golf used to just be taught in one swing, like way back in the day. And they wouldn't let anyone freestyle anything. But now with your work from a physical perspective and a workout perspective, you're able to design exercises to help him maximize the swing that he knows, owns, and loves for his entire life.
Correct. And that's also, too, like that's working with their swing coach, having that team approach, right? Because I'm going to come to you if we're working with the player and you're the swing coach. I'm like, hey, coach, what do you need him to do?
Yeah.
I'm going to see, make sure you can do that. And I'm also going to tell you, hey, from a physicality standpoint, he can do this or he can't do this. So, like, he can't go all the way back. So, take him 3/4, right? And have him just hammer from there. You have him get front set, hit that front break, and phew, let it rip.
Love that. Let's pertain this to our average golfers now and talk a little bit about what John does, just in terms of really basic, like, daily movements to get his body going and prepare for working out and golf. What are things that he's doing that people at home could definitely adapt in a simple way?
Well, I mean, the one thing you can catch the show link. We, during COVID, we did a home workout in his backyard, a home warm-up routine.
That's a must video for a lot of people listening right now. Yeah.
Believe it or not, the thing like caught fire. Like, we did that in one take. Like, we shot an iPhone, one take.
Nice.
It was kind of trippy. but like, that really is our warm-up every day. That's how we start. We use a mobility stick instead of a golf club. But like, the reason why we did it that way is because if you think about how you learn to move, right? As an infant, as a baby, right? You're on your back, you moved your head, you moved your arms and legs. Then you started rolling right and left. Then you moved to a crawling position. Then you started rolling how to sit up, right, and come back down.
Yeah.
Then you're in a standing position, right? So we build the warm-up based on how you learn to move and reconnecting your spine, your body, and reconnecting that body swing connection starting from the ground up.
Very cool. Very well put. Spencer Tatum hopping on. He's part of Team John Rahm here on The Course of Life. Let's get to a couple of silly questions here. I want to hear about your college experience, though. Nothing silly about Ohio University where you played, correct?
Correct.
Tell me a little bit about the career. They were in the MAC, so I'm a degenerate gambler. So I bet on matching football games every Tuesday and Wednesday night all fall long. What was your college football experience like, though?
It was great, man. I came in. I was a big recruit. I was going to major D1, tore my knee, went going to prep school in Fort Keene, Virginia. And then when I went there, the program was kind of not as well as it had been in the past. And so my class came and revamped that whole program. Started as a true freshman and linebacker, came as a running back, kind of outside linebacker. Oh, okay. And then first day of training camp, coach called me and he's like, hey, head coach called me in the office, Brad Noor. He's like, hey, we went to the linebacker. I'm like, hey, fine, no big deal. And he's like, oh, it's inside linebacker. I'm like, wait, what? What? But we ran 3-4 defense, so yeah. I wasn't the big backer. We got to run around. It was cool. First game started in the swamp against Florida.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
So that was pretty sick.
Very cool.
And then at that time, the MAC was like loaded with quarterbacks. We had Byron Leftwich there. We had Ben Roethlisberger.
Oh, the golden ages of MAC quarterbacks there.
Oh, yeah. Charlie Fry. Urban Meyer was at Bowling Green.
That's right. Yeah, geez. Good times.
And Michael the Burner Turner. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, every week was like big time quarterback. So it was a great time. Had a great career. The hip labrum kind of got me because yep. In 2002, like no one knew what to do with that. And so that's kind of what really propelled this whole career forward.
Awesome. I appreciate the Maction memories. We love ending with our 19th hole question here on The Course of Life. So I'm curious what your answer is going to be when you finish a good round on the course and you get into the clubhouse at your favorite course. What's your order, your meal and your drink that you like to get?
Now I got to refuel the body, right? So I'm trying to pack these calories back in there.
Yep. I'm curious what your answer is going to be here. Because people go down a lot of rabbit holes with this answer, but I'm sure yours is going to be pretty regimented.
Mine's going to be pretty regimented, right? So I make sure I'm getting some form of lean chicken, lean protein. I'm going to get some carbs, some rice, and some potatoes, and get some veggies back in the system. Cherry juice, too, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, big fan of cherry juice. Cherry juice. Yeah. Cherry juice is actually the original melatonin. It's like organic melatonin, right? So it brings you back down from that fight or flight situation. And also, it's the trypanosin in there that you get from turkey. When you want to go take a nap after. So if you ever have a tough time going to sleep, get a little tart cherry juice and
good to know.
Knock out.
Great 19th hole answer. Spencer, thank you for hopping on The Course of Life. Appreciate it. Look forward to seeing what you continue to do with John as well. So
thanks, Alex.
Course of Life podcast is brought to you by Zencastr. We've been using Zencastr here since almost the very beginning as how Alex and I record this podcast from hundreds of miles away. And it provides us with great quality audio that works every time. And it's something that makes Course of Life what it is and has kept us being able to make consistent episodes every week. And now it's super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. You log in using your browser and start recording a high-quality podcast right away. You record studio-quality sound and up to 4K video with your guests. You feel a sense of zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. And have you ever wondered what you actually sound like? Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes those ums and ahs in your recording. It removes those awkward pauses in conversation too. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with the click of a button. Head on over to zencastr.com/pricing and use our promo code COURSEOFLIFE to get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. We want you to have the same easy experiences we do for all of your podcasting and content needs. Again, that's zencastr.com/pricing and our promo code Course of Life. Zencastr, it's time to share your story. We're back. Great chat there with Spencer Tatum. He really is just training all the top athletes across all the sports.
Oh, yeah, especially in that Phoenix, Arizona hub, too. You think about how many athletes live there in the offseason and how many golfers are there, too. And I bet you, Mike, there's a lot of people listening right now saying, I had no idea that golfers train like that. Yeah, they do. Yeah. Well, yeah, welcome to the age of Tiger Woods. Every golfer trains like that now.
Have you watched, the Netflix show?
Yeah, Full Swing. Total definitely showcases workouts a lot. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It's half of the first. I haven't watched any of the next season, but the first season is like half of it is in the gym. So
yeah, there's a lot of in season two. There's a lot of Rory in the gym. Matt Fitzpatrick in the gym, a surprising amount. I don't know. He needs to keep working on the arms for the amount of time he spends in the gym. But yeah, there was a lot of good gym footage and really cool to catch up with Spencer there at the PGA show and offer his perspective. Again, if you like what you're listening to now, be sure to subscribe so you can hear more great interviews like that. We're available wherever you're listening to this podcast right now. Be sure to give us a quick second to review, like, and subscribe. And we thank you as always for listening.
All right, Alex, UConn, Houston, Purdue, North Carolina, which number one seed will be the first to drop in March Madness?
Oh, great question. I'm going to go with probably Purdue's got a tough potential second or third round matchup against Utah State or Kansas. That would be my first pick out of the one seeds. I'm comfortable with UNC advancing. I'm comfortable with the defending champ UConn. I'm comfortable with Houston making runs. Yeah, I'm always on alert for Purdue. They're just one of those teams that consistently let you down your bracket every year. And people out there know exactly what I'm talking about. So yes, they would be my first one seed to go down this year.
All right. And my other question before we talk about the heartbreak that we have to talk about, Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes, will they win it all?
I mean, that's the thing. That's the last straw, the cherry on top for her right now. She's got to run through the bracket. She got all the way to the championship game last year and fell short. It's a tall task, but they're a one seed. They're in a decent bracket. It presents a good run for them. Maybe even potentially a Final Four matchup of Iowa versus my Texas Lady Longhorns could be something in the cards. Maybe a rematch with South Carolina last year's championship matchup. That's what the world is really, really watching. I'm hearing that Caitlin Clark potential Final Four ticket prices are like double the price of Final Four prices for men's tickets. Oh, wow. So yeah, the Caitlin Clark hysteria reaching a new level as the women's bracket comes out too.
Incredible. Let's talk about our Quinnipiac Bobcats with March Madness, because we were so close, Alex.
Buzzer beating heartbreak right there. It's that conference semifinal, Mike. Yeah. We can't get over the hump to that conference final game. I think they've only played in one since you and I watched them lose in the 2010 season. Honestly, they just can't get over that hump of the winning three games in Atlantic City in the span of 4 days. A very tough feat, but it's a one big league. Our Quinnipiac Bobcats are from the MAC conference, so you got to win all three of those when it matters. QU men come up short again. We won the regular season title, but it doesn't mean jack shit if you don't win the conference tournament. So another year of waiting for the Quinnipiac men's basketball program to finally make it on the bracket.
Hey, you know what, though? We have our natty. We are still the reigning men's ice hockey Division I champions, and I will take that to the grave right now.
You came with that quick reply when I sent you the final from the basketball game. You had that one like ready to send for the loss. Dude, there.
Because we're gonna make it. Maybe one day we'll make it to March Madness on the men's side. We've been there. The women, we were that Cinderella story in the women
we had the run
years ago. Do I think the men will ever do that? No, I think we're one and done in the men's bracket. I don't see us ever making it deep. And so I'm going to take my national championship that we won in hockey, and I'm going to enjoy that every day of the week.
And ironically, it was St. Peter's. Yep, everyone knows St. Peter's, who knocked out the Quinnipiac Bobcats. And oh, looky here, St. Peter's wins the MAC, and they're back on the bracket again as a 15 seed.
Yeah, they're going to lose.
I'm just going to say, put a pin in that one, and don't be surprised if you see St. Peter's do the unthinkable again against Tennessee.
Do you think Quinnipiac would have been a 15 like St. Peter, or would we have been a 14?
Yeah, based off the record, because St. Peter's was the 5 seed in the MAC. So yeah, we were the 1 seed. In theory, I think there was maybe even a shot at a 14, which is wild to say. So the opportunity was there again. Yeah, St. Peter's the team from our conference. Notably, you mentioned UConn, one of the one seeds, our arch rival, the Yale Bulldogs, win in heroic fashion at the buzzer and find their way onto the bracket again. God, they're just a thorn in our side lately with basketball.
It's, you know what? At least we don't play them every year. It's okay. But
brackets are out. If you do want to be part of a bracket, we're running a small little $10 contest here. Just be sure to send me a DM on Instagram at Course of Life Alex if you want to join. You can send me a Venmo and I'll send you the link to join. But yeah, region-wise, it's pretty straightforward with those one seeds like you mentioned. It's UConn in the East. Going to be hard to beat Houston in the South. Looking at the Midwest, that's where I see the most potential for shakeup. I'm looking at a team like a Kentucky or Kansas to advance there instead of Purdue. And over in the West, Mike, I'm going to predict something wild and maybe pick like a low seed to advance to the Final Four there. There's going to be some carnage. We never know where it's going to happen. That's the beauty of the madness.
All right, let's talk football as well real quick, because the NFL free agency frenzy started with a bang. My Giants, which we already knew was going to happen, said goodbye to Saquon Barkley, and they've gone ahead and shored up the offense and defense, because we know it's defense that wins championships. And at least my opinion is that you can have an average or slightly above average quarterback and running back. As long as you have a great offensive line to give them protection, you can be successful.
Yeah, you're kind of going basically with the Kyle Shanahan Niners Brock Purdy theory there. I don't hate your point.
Pretty much. But hey, at least I have a quarterback. You guys on the Patriots went ahead and traded Mac Jones for a 6th-round pick.
Yep, that's all he's worth. We depleted him to nothingness, Mike. We took all his value away. He's worth 10 cents on the dollar after we're done using him for 3 years. Just an absolute mess. Yeah.
How's it to now that you have a brand new head coach and no franchise player on your team?
Yeah, we brought back Jacoby Brissett, who was our third stringer 8 years ago, and he's thrown a million interceptions since. We've still got Bailey Zappi, who's just a glorified backup or third string quarterback. And it sounds like we're going to pull the trigger and draft a quarterback at number 3. So the hype and hysteria machine will get going for the next month there. And we don't really even know which one it's going to be. We're pretty sure it's not going to be Caleb Williams, but after that, it's up for debate. So very interesting spot for first year head coach Gerard Mayo to step in with lots of uncertainty at the quarterback position, which, by the way, I think is relatively important at the game.
So how does it feel knowing that your Patriots now, without Tom Brady, without Bill Belichick, have reverted back to the horribleness that they were before?
Yep, it's bad. We're basically the Browns now. We brought in the Browns offensive coordinator. We brought in the Browns quarterback. We signed a Browns linebacker. We got a defensive player from the Browns. It's almost like we're Bill Belichick in the 1990s before he got good. We're just like the Browns of the 90s again, suddenly. It's basically a 30-year time is a flat circle moment for Patriots fans right now.
Crazy. Completely crazy. Well, hey, let's talk about something else and hashtag always end with food.
Yes, more cheerfully. Always End With Food, our food segment to end every Course of Life podcast. You can follow at Always End With Food for the nonsensical food picks and content. I'm going with a quick debate for you. You know a little bit about desserts just in general, so I want you to guess which fried dessert you think tastes better from my favorite wing bar here, Pluckers in Austin, Texas. I've recently had two on their menu, Mike. I had a fried Oreo dessert and a fried Twinkie dessert. Which one do you think tasted better?
The fried Oreo.
Yeah, it did. The Twinkie, Mike, too much breading. The cream doesn't really show through at all. You forget Twinkies are like 80-90% breading, and it just doesn't quite register from a flavor perspective. So the Oreo was far superior. I knew you'd ace that test.
Yeah, that's easy. That's not that hard.
What do you got?
Hey, I do want to talk about, I was obviously not available last weekend. I was in New Hampshire for my mother's birthday. So got to go up there and celebrate
with her and my
family. And as part of her birthday, she wanted to go to this restaurant called Greenleaf, which is headed by Chef Chris Viaud. I'm probably mispronouncing his name. James Beard nominated chef, and he was on season 18 of Top Chef. He made it to the top 8. So there's a surprisingly in Milford, New Hampshire, if you know the area, right there on the Oval in Milford, there is a James Beard nominated chef and Top Chef restaurant right there, and the food was spectacular. Just amazing. Yeah. And I sent you a picture of the plate of pan-seared duck that I got.
Yeah, we're going to get this up on Always In With Food on Instagram as well, too.
The food was great. The plating, though, I don't know how I feel about the plating.
Well, as long as it goes down the trough correctly, right?
It did. I mean, we had our pan-seared duck breast, we had confit potatoes, crispy cabbage, cauliflower, leeks, parsnip, a little fig sauce, and
yep, it's all over the place.
There's a lot going on in this plate. but everything that I got to try from what everyone else had at the table, from our appetizers through dessert, was just spectacular, well worth the price, and it was not a cheap dinner. So if you're in the southern New Hampshire or even northern Massachusetts area, and you're looking for a really great meal, Greenleaf is where I would go.
I like that. And that's really the debate I'll pose to our food Instagram audience is do you care about plating? Like how much do you value plating in a restaurant?
I do value plating. I think my plate was a little too chefy, a little too involved.
Yeah.
Other plates at the table looked much better and weren't as complex. I mean, this had, to describe this, the duck breast was cut into three sections.
That was
separated around the plate.
The thirds is interesting. I could see a bunch of slices leaned up against each other at a 45 degree angle, but the thirds, that's an interesting move. We'll get this picture up at Always End with Food on Instagram and let the people decide what their thoughts are on this plating. But tasted fantastic. So that's what
tasted amazing. It was one of the best meals I've had in a long time, and I've had some really good food here in Savannah, and this was fantastic.
Love to hear it. Awesome. That's a wrap on another great Course of Life podcast. Again, thank you for tuning in. If you've made it this far, you have to like and subscribe so you get more of what you're hearing. Be sure to check us out on YouTube for our videos dropping weekly as well. Thank you for tuning in and have a good week.